Today on Blue 58, with two promising young tight ends already on the roster, the Packers definitely don't need to draft another one, right? Right?
Blue 58!
Hello and welcome to another episode of Blue 58, the one and only podcast of thepowersweep.com. I am your host, John Meerdink, and I am happy to be with you here for another episode. We've got some actual news to talk about before we get to tight ends in today's draft preview podcast. Packers, first and foremost, are going to be playing in Brazil this fall. I think that's pretty neat. You've probably seen the news by now. A Friday night opener, apparently. And I think it's noteworthy in that the Packers have not had a home game yet in the Matt LaFleur era in week one. They've never opened the season at home since Matt LaFleur has been the head coach. Road games from 2019 through 2023, now in 2024. The Packers' last home opener was the Aaron Rodgers money comeback game in which he hit Randall Cobb for the big touchdown there late. As exciting a home opener as you could really imagine, and that it came over the Bears is just all the more sweeter, all the more sweet. Well, not all the more sweeter. Come on, John. But this continues a pretty long trend now of the Packers opening on the road. In fact, other than 2018 and 2017, the Packers have opened the year on the road every year since 2013. So it's been quite a while since we've had regular home openers, and it's been just 5 and now 6 years in a row since they've done it. Packers have also made another move in free agency, have signed cornerback Jamon Green. I did not bother looking up the pronunciation on his name because this was not the defensive back move I think that we've all been anticipating here. Which, I mean, if you're anticipating anything at all, it was not this one. Another cornerback and a fairly middling athlete with admittedly good size, though slender at 183 pounds and 6'1". Primarily an outside corner in college, did some slot and special teams work with the Giants after signing with them as an undrafted free agent after last year's draft. A depth prospect here. Not looking, I think, at a real serious contributor outside of special teams at this point, but more bodies in the defensive backfield is never a bad thing, and Green gives them one of those. Then we got some uniform news, not for the Packers specifically, but for the NFL. News coming down that the NFL is going to allow teams to start using three different helmets in a given year, starting in the 2025 season. Previously, the NFL had what they called the one-shell rule, meaning that all uniforms had to use the same helmet shell. I don't even know how long that was in place, somewhere between 5 and 10 years, something like that. But it limited what teams could do with throwbacks and alternate uniforms because everything had to be with your standard issue helmet. That's why the Packers switched from their brown throwback helmet with the yellow circle throwbacks to the yellow one, and then things have gone on from there because all they had to do was remove the stickers from their yellow helmets. They didn't even bother changing the face mask, which is one of those things that really bothered me when they would wear their blue throwbacks, as they'd have a lot of green accessories in there, starting with the green face mask. But now that's all going away, and I think even though I love it from a uniform perspective, because more uniforms are always fun, I have to admit not being super thrilled about this because it feels like we are headed the way of the NBA, where teams are just wearing so many different uniforms all the time that it's really hard to have uniformity. You don't really have uniforms as much as just what you're wearing on a given night in the NBA or on a given Sunday when you're in the NFL. And it feels like this is kind of what the NFL has been trying to get to over the past now 8 to 10 years, dating back to when they started the color rush thing, heading into the 2016 season. But it doesn't thrill me as someone who loves, you know, more traditional looks for uniforms. But just in terms of a volume perspective, we're going to have a lot of interesting things to look at. And I wonder if we get to a tipping point here with the Packers where they almost have to add another helmet to their rotation. I wonder if that's something the NFL would even pressure them into doing, and if that's something we'll see from the team in the next few years here. They'll try things, and I have to admit, the all-white uniforms have kind of grown on me. There's historical precedent for the Packers wearing a white helmet. White on white on white would look pretty good, I have to admit, even as somebody who likes the more traditional, consistent week-in, week-out uniforms. As an alternate, that would look pretty cool. Tight ends. Overall impressions of this class is that it's an okay but not great group. You've got a few guys who are pretty to quite productive. And then there are a few guys who are productive and athletic. There's a bunch of really good athletes, though. I haven't looked back at previous years to compare, but I think that's basically how most classes shape up. This is basically business as usual here. And I think that's because it's a difficult position. You're not going to find a lot of good athletes who are productive, or guys that are super productive and athletic, or you're probably going to mix and match a lot at the college level, because if you think about it, just so much goes into playing tight end, especially when you're making the jump from college level to the NFL level, because your responsibilities vary so much play to play. Just think, if you're a tight end, of how many different guys, how many different body types you are going to be responsible for blocking on a down-in, down-out basis. Just imagine a hypothetical 4 or 5 snap span where you start out lining up as a traditional tight end. It's a run play. You might end up blocking a defensive end or an edge rusher, a guy who's at least as big as you, probably bigger. The next couple of plays, you split out into the slot. You're probably matching up against a linebacker or a defensive back, either in the run game or in the passing game. That guy's going to be your size or a little bit smaller, but almost certainly as fast or faster than you. Then they bump you back into the backfield. You're going to line up with your hand on the ground and pretend you're a fullback for a while. You may end up taking on a linebacker or defensive back in space on the move, which is an interesting challenge. Or you could end up blasting through the line of scrimmage looking to take on the first guy you see, which is almost certainly going to be a linebacker, but could be somebody even bigger and nastier. Then maybe they split you out wide, and you might, on a given play, be facing the opposing team's best cornerback, depending on how they're lining up and their scheme and stuff like that. It's a lot. It's a lot to take in, and you understand why there might not be a lot of great prospects as we look at this, how this class breaks down. In my data capture, there were 6 tight ends in the top 150 on the consensus mock draft big board. There were 15 in the top 250. So basically, it looks like we're talking about day 2 or 3 picks, by and large, when we look at the tight end sample. There isn't really a lot of guys that are going to be even considered in the first round. Brock Bowers out of Georgia is about it, and we don't even have complete numbers on him. No testing data, so he's not going to be part of the guys that we talk about on this episode. Looking at our process for evaluation, we're assuming going in that guys are not going to be great blockers. You talk about all the different things that you have to do at the college level, jumping then to the NFL level where everybody's bigger and stronger and faster. You understand why guys might not even be good in college and certainly are probably going to struggle in the NFL. So let's just throw that out. Let's just assume that everybody is going to be a work in progress as a blocker. That's not to say that you can't make big strides as a blocker over the course of even your rookie season. We saw that with both Luke Musgrave and Tucker Kraft, especially Tucker Kraft, I feel like over the course of the year really improved as a blocker. But let's just assume that guys are not going to be great blockers to start. So we're looking at them primarily as big wide receivers. So we return to Paul Noonan of Acme Packing Company's numbers here, basically treating everybody like wide receivers and using his wide receiver OPS data for things like that. We're going to assume that the best tight ends are going to be end up being used roughly like receivers in the passing game anyway, positioning-wise, target volume-wise, things like that. They basically will function as wide receivers, so we might as well throw wide receiver numbers at them. So, our tiers. We're looking for guys that are 8-plus relative athletic score athletes in all tiers, basically. The top two for sure. But tier one guys are going to be guys that have the combined wide receiver OPS and RAS score, or RAPS, of 18 or higher. We're also looking for guys that either crack or that could just crack 8 in relative athletic score and an 800 or better in wide receiver OPS. So that's your combination of athleticism and productivity. Tier two is guys that hit 8 or more on relative athletic score. We figure you got to be athletic to be a tight end. This is a good kind of lump of clay position, too. You want to take a guy who's promising, who may not have a position elsewhere, too big to be in the backfield, too small or perhaps too slow to be a wide receiver, probably just too slow to be a wide receiver, bigger and slower, maybe just a little bit better of a blocker than a wide receiver. So you put him at tight end and hope he figures things out from there. I think you can get away with just having some elite athletes and seeing what you get out of him at tight end when you're looking just from an evaluation perspective. Then tier three is the ultra-productive wide receiver OPS guys that hit 900 or better on Paul's scale there. it's rare to see something like this because it's rare to be that productive at the college level without some elite athleticism. But if it happens, I think it's worth mentioning, we don't have anybody in that tier at this position this season, though. So just file that in the back of your head. We will have one guy who comes close. We'll mention him in due course. As far as the Packers' needs at tight end, I find this to be a very curious position. You are still very young, but very, very promising. And without going super deep into what they did last year, I think Tucker Kraft and Luke Musgrave both performed either as expected or even better than expected. The ups and downs, I think, are what we expected from them. And at their best, they looked like the best versions of, I think, what we expected from both of those guys. You also had Ben Sims around. His position is probably in a little bit of jeopardy with Tyler Davis coming back after his ACL injury late in training camp last year. But Josiah DeGuara is gone. I was going to say almost assuredly gone. He is gone. He is signed with the Jaguars now. And if there's an opening at tight end, it's for that DeGuara-esque role. I have some questions about the role that that plays with the Packers, though, because we mentioned in our DeGuara recap, talking about what he did last year, that last year was basically the Josiah DeGuara experience. You're getting him playing in the backfield a lot. He lines up in the slot. He lines up as a wing, an H-back, whatever you want to call that. And it only amounts to, what, 192 snaps on offense? It doesn't seem like that's that big of a role in the offense anymore. You did do some stuff with Henry Pearson in that role last year, but I don't know if you need more than that. And I honestly, though it stings to say it, I hope the Packers are done spending on that kind of role, because as interesting and promising as it could be, I think the Packers have kind of figured that they can fill that role with just a guy. You don't need to have a premium draft pick at that position, because it certainly didn't work out doing it with Josiah DeGuara. There's also some interesting timing aspects to Josiah DeGuara's kind of departure from the Packers. I think the way that Matt LaFleur's offense evolved during his career really worked out poorly timing-wise for him, because he looked early on in his career to be a really big part of what the Packers wanted to do, but then he tears his ACL. And if you believe the two-year timeline to get back to full strength, by the time he is back at full strength, what he does, what the Packers drafted him to do, is a much smaller part of what they wanted to do on offense. And he is a little bit more ill-suited to what they wanted to do by the time he's back to really being full strength. So sometimes things just don't work out. They tried something and it didn't work. And, you know, you could really go back and say this is something that a lot of people predicted at the time probably wouldn't work. But, hey, it was a swing, and I don't know if they're going to learn their lesson and not swing that way again, but we tried something and we'll see what we learned. That said, even if they don't spend at that position, I'm never going to be against adding a tight end. Having more tight ends is always going to be my dream. We need to reach the tight end specific offense because, you know, having two tight ends is great, but three would be even better. I think a wise man once said that triples is best. Triples makes it safe. So let's get that other tight end. And, of course, they're valuable special teams contributors, too, so let's find one. I don't honestly know what the Packers end up doing. I just kind of like to do the bit of the Packers wanting more tight ends and me personally wanting more tight ends as well. So let's get more tight ends. The first guy in our sample that I want to talk about is 78th on the consensus mock draft big board, Cade Stover out of Ohio State. 6'3 and 7/8, 247 pounds, tier one prospect as an 8.22 relative athletic score and over 900 in wide receiver OPS. He didn't break the 18 combined, but he got to a good level in both, so close enough to tier one in my books to call it. He is the second best, I think, athleticism and productivity numbers guy that we've got numbers on in this year's sample. Brock Bowers, again, would have something to say about that, but he's right up there. If you believe in Pro Football Focus's charting, Stover only had two drops on more than 100 targets in his last two seasons in college combined. The knock on him is that he's just kind of good, not great anywhere. His productivity is pretty close to great, but the physical stuff, he's got good but not great size. He's got very good athleticism, but not great athleticism, just a 4.65 in the 40-yard dash. It didn't, like, vault over the 8 relative athletic score threshold. An 8.22 is certainly good enough, but not great, especially not compared to some of the other guys we're going to talk about in this class. And those are not big knocks. You need guys that are good. And if you want to spin it a different way, you call him just a high floor prospect, maybe not a high ceiling one. Maybe he's pretty close to his potential already. But that is a useful player. If he's just as good as he was in college and is some version of that in the NFL, you can get by with that, I think, as your second or third tight end, probably. Maybe even your first tight end, depending on the kind of offense you run and what you want from your tight end. So not necessarily a bad prospect by any means, just a little bit underwhelming for the first tight end we talk about off the board. And again, there are some other guys who we're not talking about because we have incomplete numbers on them. Fun fact about Stover is he's pretty new to tight end. He played defensive end at Ohio State for the first little while that he was there, then played tight end after playing running back and linebacker in high school. And you could kind of see it with those size numbers. If he didn't have like an extra growth spurt, I don't know what his growth curve was like, but he's like an extra growth spurt away from still being a running back. If he ends up sticking around at 6'1 and 220, he ends up being a smallish linebacker or a running back who's maybe a blocking back in college, but he ends up big and tall and ends up at tight end at the college level and is headed for tight end in the NFL. Number 106, Theo Johnson out of Penn State is next up on our discussion list here. 6'6", 259 pounds, just crushes the athleticism numbers. A 993 relative athletic score. Tier 2 prospect, though, because he doesn't clear our productivity numbers. Is 0.716 wide receiver OPS, good but not great. Still very good, though. Pretty solid. You can get by with that. The good stuff, look, he's your height, weight, speed prospect. You want the lump of clay that I talked about before. You want the guy that you can try to make into a tight end at the NFL level. Why not start with a guy who's already big and strong and fast? Ran a 4.57 at 259 pounds. That's cooking. We don't talk or haven't talked, I guess, to this point about height-adjusted speed score. Mentioned it at wide receiver a little bit. For tight ends, it's something worth considering, too. If you want it, he's got it. 130-plus on his height-adjusted speed score. He's one of only two guys in the class above 120. The next closest guy is Tip Reiman. He's 125 on the big board out of Illinois. But Ryman's only ran a 125. In terms of his height-adjusted speed score. So as good as that number is, this guy is even better. Johnson, another elite athlete out of Penn State. If you want to knock him, the agility stuff is not quite there. He had an elite shuttle, but his three-cone time is just okay. Not wildly productive in college. Some of this is usage, and that's something that we should keep in mind with a lot of prospects that we're trying to project to the NFL level. Just because they haven't done something at the college level doesn't mean that they can't. It could just be that that's what they were asked to do. And part of our job and the real job of NFL scouts is to project what guys could be in the NFL, not just what they were in college. So that's always something worth keeping in the back of your mind. It could just be a usage deal. Maybe he's the greatest tight end in the world, but that's just not what Penn State wants to do. It sounds self-defeating from a coaching perspective, but we got to remember that some coaches are kind of stubborn sometimes and they want to run things a certain way. And even if they've got this unicorn of an athlete at a given position, if they want to run the ball and have their tight ends in line and do traditional tight end things, well, that's something that they're going to do. Anyway, fun fact, Johnson is a psychology major at Penn State. Maybe he can apply that to really getting in his opponent's heads at the NFL level. I think I make some version of that joke every single year, but we're going to keep making it because I like it. Number 108, Ben Sinnott out of Kansas State is our next prospect to talk about. 6'3 and 7/8, 250 pounds, a tier one prospect on account of his 9.73 relative athletic score and 0.842 wide receiver OPS. He is right there athletically with Theo Johnson in just about everything. Bit slower on the 40, but there in all the athleticism stuff, he's slightly smaller, therefore a slightly smaller relative athletic score. One of the most versatile guys, pretty close to 60-40 split in terms of playing in the slot to inline on passing plays. You see him out wide a lot in his college career. 91 snaps in the backfield, too. Makes me wonder if maybe he's your DeGuara guy. Maybe. Might be a little bit of a stretch, but it's more than a lot of these other guys have in terms of backfield snaps. So let's not dismiss it out of hand, put it that way. He's maybe a little bit of a tweener based on size, and that makes me wonder a little bit about the DeGuara comp 2 there. We'll get all the words out eventually. What do you do with these guys that are big but not huge? Because for a normal human being, 6'3", nearly 6'4", and 250 pounds is pretty huge. Like, you would notice a guy like that if he walked into a room. On an NFL field, that doesn't do a whole lot for you, especially just looking at the geography of a football field. Where is a guy like Ben Sinnott going to have to line up? If he's the point of attack on, you know, on your running play, he's the tight end on the strong side of the formation, and he's head up against a defensive end or an outside linebacker, chances are he's giving up at least 10 to 20 pounds. Maybe if he's going on an edge rusher in a smaller scheme, it could be a guy that's, you know, 245, 250. You're pretty close to evenly matched. But you're starting off at a size disadvantage to begin with. He's not going to swallow anybody up with length. He's not going to just outbody people just based on size. So what do you do with guys like that? These are rhetorical questions because I don't know the answer. It's just an interesting challenge because you see a guy like Sinnott who's definitely productive at the college level. He's certainly a great athlete, but he's just a little bit small. So what do you do with him? I don't know. I don't have the answer. I do know that in high school, he was a very, very highly regarded football player, was All-State at three positions in high school, tight end, wide receiver, and defensive end. Not too shabby. Rare to see that, but not unheard of. Still pretty impressive. The last guy I want to talk about in depth is Jaheim Bell out of Florida State, 6'2", 241 pounds. Misses on productivity, but plenty good as an athlete, over 8 on his relative athletic score. Profiles as one of your smaller slot guys. You would think of him as a backfield sort of guys. Really did not have any snaps there. I think it was single digits his final year at Florida State. Surprising a little bit given his size. He's basically fullback sized already, but spent a lot of time in the slot, a lot of time lined up tight to the formation. He's basically fullback sized already, so his offensive usage is probably going to have to change a little bit at the NFL level. Again, those tweener sort of guys need a specific role in the NFL, and I don't really know what role he falls into. But in terms of his productivity and athleticism, he's worth at least keeping an eye on later in the game. If the Packers want to add somebody kind of like what they've had in Henry Pearson or DeGuara, maybe worth a look. Fun fact, he played at South Carolina before he was at Florida State, and he holds 2 tight end receiving yardage records at South Carolina. The top 2 in terms of single game yardage as a tight end, 159 yards versus North Carolina and 136 versus Vanderbilt. Not too shabby. Everybody else, a few guys in the later portions of the draft, 4 I want to mention here. First, we've got Jared Wiley out of TCU, another super elite athlete, 6'6", 249, ran a 4'6", 240. Not too shabby at that size. Would take a look there. Tip Reiman out of Illinois. You want more athletes, here you go. Nearly 6'5", 271 pounds, and put out a cool 4.64 40-yard dash at that 271-pound figure. Not too shabby. Also aspires to be a strength and conditioning coach. I like that for him. That's a fun little nugget there. A.J. Barner out of Michigan, way down at 205 on the big board, is the annual tall, moderately athletic Michigan tight end. A 6'6", 254-pound prospect, 4.81 in the 40, so not lighting it up, but still at that size, a little bit hard to ignore. Then Devin Culp, way down at 249, another DeGuara possibility, though almost no snaps in college, but at 6'3", 231 pounds, he's not going to be a strong side, hand-on-the-ground tight end in the NFL, so might as well look at him in the backfield if the Packers would end up drafting a guy like him. Now, I mentioned that there was a guy who was very close to just making that outrageously high 900 line on wide receiver OPS despite having just okay athleticism. If you're looking for that rare, productive, but not athletic in college tight end, Tanner McLaughlin out of Arizona is your guy. The agility numbers really sank him, so he's just got a 7.6 relative athletic score, but he was as productive as it gets at tight end, one of the highest numbers in our sample. If you're looking for a guy who just gets it done, he may be your guy. That's what the numbers say, at least. You would hope for a little bit better in terms of testing stuff, but hey, can't all be perfect. And if he learns how to turn, he would be a much more interesting athlete and a much more interesting prospect. And it could be that he just had a bad day. It could be that he didn't practice that or had poor coaching on something like that. So maybe he's more athletic than his testing numbers. You never really know. You can look, two guys can look at the same player on tape and differ about how athletic they think he is. Maybe this is the case with McLaughlin. You never really know. Maybe you get him on the field and he turns out to be a nice little bonus piece. Those are the tight ends. That's all I've got for you. And that's all I've got for you in this episode of Blue 58. I appreciate you tuning in. I'd appreciate it even more if you'd take a second and share this episode with someone you think would enjoy it. That's going to help more people find the show and get more people involved in this conversation you and I are having about the Green Bay Packers, which in turn is going to help all of us, me included, become smarter Packers fans. And as I always say, smarter Packers fans are better Packers fans, and better Packers fans are what we all want to be. I'm your host, John Meerdink. We'll see you next time on Blue 58.